Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy.
And I'm Claire Woodcock. Woody Creek may be downstream from Aspen, but City Council is still looking at it as a potential site for a reservoir to store water for a rainy day.
Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper is in the national news as a potential half of a unity ticket in 2020.
The new city market in Carbondale asked for a seventh extension after Amazon dropped prices at Whole Foods on Monday.
And we're getting ready for some audience sing-alongs at the Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day Festival. We talk with festival founder and president Jim Horowitz.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition.
On Tuesday night, the Aspen City Council updated its to-do list. As Allison Bechtesh reports, the top goals will direct the next 2 years of government priorities.
The council spent 2 days last month identifying 9 issues that need special attention in Aspen. Last night, they discussed the exact goal language for each topic. 2 of Mayor Steve Skadron's pet projects made the list, strengthening what he calls the uphill economy and reducing the motorist-to-pedestrian ratio downtown. Each of the 9 broad categories has a city staff member assigned as team leader, with additional city staff assigned to work on the issue. Other top goals reflect community priorities of supporting local businesses, reducing Aspen's carbon footprint, and modernizing the employee housing program. Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Access to the Colorado River and rest areas in Glenwood Canyon will be closed for the next 2 weeks while work continues on the Grand Avenue Bridge. Crews will begin setting steel girders for the new traffic bridge today. They are expected to finish by September 10th. Meanwhile, Shoshone and Grizzly Creek put-ins will be closed to prevent anyone from floating under the construction work. Most of the old concrete pier sitting in the middle of the Colorado River was removed last week. Meanwhile, crews are mixing the concrete to lay footers and piers for the new Grand Avenue Bridge. Unlike the old one, no part of the new one will be in the river.
About 800 people were in Denver last week for the Colorado Oil and Gas Association's annual energy summit. As Benta Berkland reports, Senators Cory Gardner and Michael Bennett discussed the future of the industry.
Both senators praised the oil and gas sector for creating high-paying jobs and boosting Colorado's economy. But Democratic Senator Michael Bennett says the industry must tackle the hard questions like climate change and work with concerned citizens. He also urged innovation.
Somebody is going to engineer our way to a lower carbon future. I would rather that be the United States of America than China.
Republican Senator Cory Gardner says the country is better off reducing carbon emissions and pollution and supporting wind and solar to a point.
Where I draw the line is I'm not willing to hurt the economy, and I'm not willing to drive up costs on those who can least afford it.
Colorado has long been the epicenter on the discussion over fracking and environmental regulations. Governor John Hickenlooper recently unveiled new guidelines after a fatal home explosion last spring caused by a severed oil and gas flow line. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
National media are reporting of a possible unity party ticket in 2020 with Governor John Hickenlooper and Republican Governor John Kasich of Ohio. Hickenlooper would run for vice president, but Hickenlooper isn't ready to make any pledges. Again, Benta Berkland.
Hickenlooper was in Telluride to discuss rural economic vitality and told member station KOTO that he's not ready to commit. He's term limited next year.
The moment I start talking about, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to run for Senate or president or something in 2020? The minute I talk about that, the minute I form a PAC or something, form a committee, then not only am I distracted, but all my cabinet, all the people that work with me become distracted.
He says he wants to know he gave the governor's office all he had. Meanwhile, he and Kasich continue to work together on policy issues such as health care and immigration. Locally, Hickenlooper says expanding broadband will be a major focus for his final legislative session. I'm Benta Berkland.
3 of the 5 positions on Aspen School Board are up for election this fall. As Allison Bechtesh reports, all incumbents are seeking to retain their seats.
Incumbents Dwayne Romero, Susan Marolt, and Margot Johansson have all turned in paperwork for this fall's election. Both Romero and Johansson were appointed to fill partial terms that opened up between elections. Neither was elected by popular vote. Joining the incumbents on the ballot are Susan Zimmet and Jonathan Nichols. Both serve on the District Accountability Committee, a state-required education advisory group. The petition deadline for those seeking to run is this Friday, September 1st. Allison Bektesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Claire Woodcock. In case you didn't know already, Aspen Public Radio is on Facebook. Like our page for updates on our latest events, pictures of the Aspen Public Radio team, and links to important stories. Go to Facebook and search Aspen Public Radio, or just go to facebook.com/aspenradio to like the page and start getting updates. The new K-8 Riverview School south of Glenwood Springs has its grand opening tonight. Wyatt Orm reports.
The ribbon for the new Riverview School will be cut tonight around 5. There are 345 students who are enrolled and 45 staff members. The school will offer curriculum in both English and Spanish. The goal is to send students to high school able to read, write, and speak in both languages. The $34 million project was meant to ease overcrowding at existing schools in Glenwood Springs. School starts on Tuesday, September 5th. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
City of Aspen staff is working to understand and prepare for future water needs, and part of that could mean a reservoir to store municipal water. The city also faces opposition from environmental groups and private landowners in state water court over its rights to build dams on Castle and Maroon Creeks. Brent Gardner-Smith is executive director of Aspen Journalism and has been reporting on this issue for years. Hi, Brent.
Hi.
Okay, so the city of Aspen has land in Woody Creek under contract to use for a reservoir. On Monday, council agreed to ask voters to approve bonds to buy that land. Can you explain some of the context and background and what will be in front of voters this fall?
Well, the city has a perceived need to store water somewhere, if not in Castle and Maroon Creek. Apparently, they'd like to do it in Woody Creek. They are working on a study to define how much storage they might need, and presumably voters might have that piece of information in front of them when they go to vote. But beyond that, it's not clear that the status of the potential reservoirs on Castle and Maroon will be resolved by Election Day.
Okay, now that's because City Manager Steve Barwick mentioned that the city has these rights on Castle and Maroon Creeks, and they hope to transfer those rights to fill the reservoir in Woody Creek. Do we know how much time that might take to transfer those rights and if it's likely to happen?
The city's stated intent is to try and transfer the water rights for both Castle and Maroon, or at least for Maroon, down to Woody Creek, which would mean transferring the size of the reservoirs and their priority date of 1971, but that's going to likely be a long process through water court, so it's unlikely that the water rights situation would be resolved by November.
Okay, now what's happening in the two current water court cases? The city has these rights on Castle and Maroon Creeks, but they face opposition from a number of different parties. You reported on a settlement offer earlier this month. What does that look like?
The city has put forward a proposal that they are willing to move Maroon Creek Reservoir completely out of Maroon Creek, but they're not willing to move Castle Creek Reservoir out of Castle Creek. And that is now just percolating there. The next status conference in the case is November 9th. So the city of Aspen has until November 9th to try and reach a settlement now. If they don't, it could be in front of the water court referee for another 6 months, or it could move to a litigation phase and move to a trial in front of a water court judge.
That could take years.
Could, yes.
Okay, so November's election is on November 7th, so voters won't know if the Castle and Maroon court cases have been settled.
I suppose the court cases could be settled, but it's unlikely that the water rights would be duly transferred to this new location by Election Day. That's a separate water court process, which is likely to take years.
Can you give some context and information about the process in water court? What needs to happen to resolve all these issues? What kind of timeline are we on?
There's 12 to 18 months in water court where an application is before a water court referee. So in the next 6 months, the city could settle the two cases on Castle and Maroon to the satisfaction of the opposing parties. And those two cases go away or are put on hold. Then, though, if they're going to try and transfer these water rights to a new location, that's a separate water court application and needs to proceed on its own, first before a water court referee, and then if the issues can't be worked out before a water court judge in a trial setting. So water court is slow, and it's often worked out behind closed doors with the opposing parties. So it's not clear how either one or all three of these cases are going to unfold in a way that makes it easy for voters to make a call on whether they should buy this property at this time.
Okay, thanks, Brent.
You're welcome.
Kroger owns the City Market grocery chain. They're planning a new grocery store in Carbondale. On Monday, the company was supposed to submit a handful of documents to the town. Instead, they sent a letter asking for an extension. Wyatt Orm reports.
Kroger is requesting an additional 150 days to fully commit to Carbondale's new City Market. They want to wait until after their fiscal year ends in February of 2018. The town has already granted them 6 extensions. The last was for 90 days. The company cited budgetary issues. Kroger's stock fell considerably in late June when Amazon announced its purchase of the grocery chain Whole Foods. Jay Harrington is Carbondale's town manager. He says the Board of Trustees will likely take the question of an extension up at their September 26th meeting. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
Reporter Allison Bektesh stopped by the Aspen Homeless Shelter's Day Center recently. She talked with producer Kristen Kay about summer use, new programs, and preparations for the winter season.
So let's start with some of the new programs going on at the shelter. What did you hear about these?
So I got to speak with a lot of different people who were involved with that day center. I spoke with shelter users. I went and sat around for an afternoon. I spoke with shelter director Vince Savage, and I also spoke with Andy Atkinson, and he's one of those new programs. He's the Aspen Police Department's new hire that is specifically supposed to work with members of the homeless community, people who are going through addiction treatment, and people with mental health issues. So Vince Savage said that's one of the best new things, that we have someone who's in uniform coming just to ask the clients how they're doing, what they're working on, what jobs they're looking for. And that level of respect has really strengthened the relationship between the homeless shelter and the Aspen Police Force. Andy told me one of the things he was looking into as he got into this job was what other shelters are doing, what kind of programs they have. And one thing that they have is this community service program where shelters will have some sort of community service element to the people who are getting the services from the shelter. That was floated around as a requirement for the Aspen Homeless Shelter this summer. I'll say that's one of the things that clients there were not very happy about.
What were the issues with that program?
This was a new idea, a new program, and I think there's a couple things that didn't quite work with our homeless population. First of all, we have a really high rate of working homeless. The shelter serves almost 200 individuals a year. And if you walk around Aspen, you're not seeing 200 people panhandling or sleeping in public. But I would venture to say that you are seeing homeless people in Aspen. I spent a whole afternoon. I talked to a guy about my age. Later that night, I was at my favorite restaurant. I saw him cooking behind the bar. We waved at each other. So the people who are using the services are also mostly working. That means it's hard to make free time for a community service commitment. Other reasons why people might find themselves using the day center is because they have mental health issues, because they have physical disabilities. And so I think this particular population wasn't prepared for a requirement to be somewhere and then serve the city. So before Andy came along, really their only interaction with the city was people saying we need to get rid of homeless people. It was a flashlight waking them up at night and telling them to move on down the road. It felt a little weird to say do something good for the people who you're usually trying to avoid.
Are there circumstances in which a program like that could work in Aspen?
I do believe so. Everyone I spoke to is grateful for the day center. I know visitors to Aspen, along with the people who use the services, understand what it would mean if we didn't have that, especially when winter comes around.
How is the shelter preparing for the upcoming winter season?
This year, St. Mary's is under construction, so we don't have a space currently. We also don't have that $20,000 required to pay the overnight staff. So that's something that Vince is working on really hard before those freezing nights and snows come in.
Okay, thank you, Allison.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Zebry. To stay in the know with what's happening with Aspen Public Radio and throughout the community, like our Facebook page and other social media channels. On our Facebook page, you can interact with our station through comments on our posts and by messaging us directly. This is also the place to go for breaking news and other important updates on what's happening in the Valley and statewide. Check it out by searching Aspen Public Radio on Facebook. Construction crews can now park their vehicles overnight at the Intercept lot. This is to help ease congestion in Glenwood Springs during the Grand Avenue Bridge construction. Wyatt Orm has more.
Think of this not as a park and ride, but as a ride and park. People who work in Aspen can now park their vehicles overnight at the Intercept lot and bus the rest of the way home. RAFTA is making use of a gravel section of the Intercept lot that's typically used for overflow traffic. RAFTA's Kent Blackmer says the object is to get people off the road so that traffic in Glenwood is more bearable. There is one caveat, though. No overnight parking during the Jazz Aspen Labor Day Festival. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
Xcel Energy released plans this week to replace coal with clean energy.
The energy company filed a request with the Colorado Public Utilities Commission to replace coal generators in Pueblo with clean energy. It would mean closing two coal-fired power plants a decade early. Environmental groups, including the Sierra Club and Western Resource Advocates, worked with Xcel on the plan. Press releases from those groups say the move could mean lower costs for customers and improved air quality from cutting millions of tons of greenhouse gas emissions. Xcel Energy provides electricity to 1.4 million customers statewide, including some in Glenwood Springs and Carbondale.
Democratic House Leader Nancy Pelosi was in Colorado yesterday speaking about the importance of getting more women to run for political office. Benta Berkland has more.
Pelosi is a mother of five and the first female Speaker of the House. During her stop in Denver, she says reducing the influence of money in politics and making it less nasty would attract more women to run for office. She also says too many women underestimate their strengths, and women need to win now more than ever.
Some of the young women in our midst really do not have the confidence that they should have to take on responsibilities. They know they have the talent. They know they have the spirit, but somehow or other, they are not getting enough encouragement.
Pelosi was joined by state leaders and was with the group Emerge. It's working to bring new women into politics and help their campaigns. The group is working with 51 Democratic female candidates in Colorado over the next 3 years. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Garfield County doesn't have a detox center. People who are withdrawing from alcohol, drugs, or both can go to the emergency room at Valley View Hospital, but that's about it. The Garfield County Board of Commissioners discussed the issue during their regular meeting on Monday. Producer Kristen Kay sat down with Wyatt Orm to learn more about detox centers, why Garfield County doesn't have one, and what needs to happen in order to get one.
Okay, so get us up to speed. What is a detox facility? Why doesn't Garfield County have one?
A detox facility is a place where people can get sober, and it's a process that does take time and attention. Someone who's going through alcohol withdrawal can have very uncomfortable or even life-threatening symptoms. Once people do sober up at a detox clinic, someone there will sit down with them and kind of talk through recovery options. Garfield County had a detox facility. It was run by Mind Springs, and they're the company that provides mental health services around the Western Slope. It was basically in between Glenwood Springs and Carbondale.
So is this a money issue? Are detox facilities particularly expensive to operate?
The thing about detox facilities is they don't get a lot of money from the state or from the federal government, nor from insurance companies. So it relies almost entirely on local funding. And so when the recession hit, the different governments that were funding the detox facility in Garfield County, they kind of struggled to keep paying for it. Also, Pitkin County started its own detox facility. So there were a lot of different things that contributed to Garfield County's closure. Mind Springs for a time moved it to the jail in order to save money and to keep it going, but there were some major problems with having a detox center kind of at the jail. There's not a lot of expensive technology that goes into a detox facility. What is expensive about it is the staffing. State law requires there be at least two people in the facility, even if there's just one client, and the kind of staffing goes up proportionately.
So people who would otherwise be taken to a detox facility often end up in the emergency room, which seems like it would pose a number of problems.
Yeah, I mean, one of the major ones is cost, right? Emergency rooms are expensive. So in the past year, there were
over 200 people that presented to the Valley View emergency room because they were withdrawing from alcohol, and they sent home around 170 of those people. So there's a high rate of recidivism. And that kind of leads to the second point, which is that emergency rooms aren't there to counsel people.
How close is Garfield County to funding their own detox center?
Not close. So in order for them to have a detox facility, they need a location and they need money. And Commissioner Tom Jankowski did hint that there might be a location and there might be some money, but that remains to be seen. Of course, Glenwood Springs in April did decide to tax marijuana, and one of the things that they were talking about was funding a detox center with some of that.
Okay, thank you, Wyatt.
You're welcome.
The Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day experience kicks off on Friday. Claire sat down with the festival's founder and president, Jim Horowitz, to discuss this year's lineup.
I want to talk to you today about the opening bands, the bands that go on before the headliners at a show.
Sure.
They play a crucial part in music festivals, in regular concerts that you would go to.
Sure. The undercard. Middle.
Yeah.
The opening acts.
Yeah.
Well, we have a really... probably the best collection of, quote, opening bands in the history of the JAS Labor Day weekend experience. Other festival bills, which have an interesting hierarchy of the size of the print of the names, they have their certain top-tier group of the headliners that are in the biggest, you know, highest size, and then there's the second tier, and then there's the smaller ones. We've had a lot of bills that you could realistically say these are double bills. They're not like, it's not an opening band. I mean, this has been going on at Labor Day for a while. The 5 o'clock band is a headline band in many places.
So Jazz Aspen is kind of like a breeding ground for openers to become headliners.
Well, in 20 years, we've had a lot of great acts that have come up. I mean, a lot. Any great festival, or we call ourselves an experience, but it's a festival of kind. It's just a unique one. Survives and thrives because it's been able to have a maintain a healthy blend of the old established household name, even the great iconic artist, you know, this is like a very famous person, but then at the same point to always be identifying great young talent. I mean, we had Diana Krall. She played in 1997 in the basement of the Silvertree Hotel in the cabaret room. It was the first time we knew about her. And then 1999, she's co-headlining with Ray Charles.
When you're looking to book a up-and-coming act, what qualities are you looking for in the musicians and the music that they play?
We're looking for compelling artists that put on, that are capable of commanding a big stage, and they've shown that. But then beyond that, if you don't have that, and there are cases where we do, did someone that we know, case in point, the Revivalists, who we haven't talked about, who are coming back this year. And they were just really kind of on their way up then. When we booked them, they were smaller. Now they're actually quite a lot bigger. But it just worked out that they were available. And we had already a great bill with Maroon 5 and The Roots. And they liked it. So
are there instances where a headliner will bring an opener?
Yes.
Okay.
We're tending to get artists now who are... it isn't so much the touring situation as it's a year where they're not doing a full-blown tour with 100 dates or 200 dates, but they're actually preparing to do a new record, for example. And so they're just going to go cherry pick and do 5 or 6 cool events in the summertime. And every one of them is just what's called a run out. You know, they're home that week, and then come Friday, they get in a plane and they fly to a place like Aspen, and Saturday night they do a gig, and Sunday they go home.
What other bands are you excited for coming up?
Lake Street Dive, opening the festival, really the experience on Friday night at 6 o'clock prior to Hall & Oates, is a band that we've been chasing for years, years and years and years. And for both Labor Day and June, we've sent them an offer every year since they hit, which is, it feels like about 7 years or so ago. And they've wanted to come and play, but it just hasn't worked out. And then, you know, sometimes it's like the eclipse. Things just suddenly line up that didn't before. And this is a case of, here's a band, Lake Street Dive, who actually covers some Hall & Oates songs. This is a very compatible band. It's a nice fit. This bill they liked and Hall & Oates like. And what I was going to mention is that we are seeing more and more at JAS where artists really want to know who else is on the bill. In fact, they make it a condition. It becomes something that they want to talk about. Well, okay, we might take, but who else is on the bill?
Well, Aspen Public Radio is jazzed for Jazz Aspen. So no pun intended.
That is a pun.
Yeah, it was a good one, right? Thanks so much for coming into the studio today.
Look forward to our next conversation.
John Oates himself will stop by the Aspen Public Radio studio to play a tiny couch concert before Hall & Oates headlines the Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day experience on Friday night. And we just can't wait. In honor of the JAS Festival and, hey, the upcoming holiday weekend, here's Hall & Oates with their 1980 hit, You Make My Dreams Come True. My dreams come true. John Oates will be stopping by the Aspen Public Radio studio tomorrow before his band headlines the JAS Labor Day experience on Friday night.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy.
And I'm Claire Woodcock. To hear this show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. News director Carolyn Zachariasen talks with a panel of local journalists about the week's news.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.